But there are some things that, good morning and welcome everybody. There are some things leading up to that part that if you're not doing, the objection you're getting is, what most of them are early in your career. It's just an excuse. Like it's the easiest thing they can throw out to you that gets you out of their house, right? So you'll find that it's just, it's too much money, that kind of thing, right? With someone that you know can afford it, they don't necessarily want it. They don't necessarily want to do business with you. They don't have any passion or energy for making this transaction happen. And it can be hard because you see a situation where the product that you're presenting is a perfect fit for this family or this home, right? And you can't make that connection happen where they understand that. And the money is so outweighed by the value of this product or service that you're just scratching your head on the way out. So just skipping over to objections all the time is really doing everybody a disservice. So I figured we'd start a little bit earlier. And how do we get into the home, or sorry, how do we start the conversation with a client? Well, for most of us in the room, thankfully, that conversation starts with hopefully a professional on the phone before we ever get there, and that tone is set. So we have to be really careful about who's talking to our clients before we are, as frontline people. But when we get to the door, so most training will tell you that you look around quickly and you find something to compliment that person on. And I know there are some trainers on here who train that. I'm not one of them. And the reason I'm not one of them is I had several bad experiences with salespeople. Now that I'm in Phoenix, I have a new solar company at my door twice a day, probably, and the weekend. It's just all weekend. But on a window estimate, I had three companies come out either on Memorial Day or 4th of July. And the first one that came in complimented my grass halfway up the yard as he walked on it after parking in my driveway and looked right over at a picture of my family. And mind you, my wife is standing next to me and you can hear kids upstairs. And he gets like 4 inches from the picture and he's like, "Oh my goodness, are those your kids? Is that your family?" And my wife and I just like, "Ugh." Stick it away from the kid's picture, will you? Like, gross. And the whole experience just creeped me out. And then, of course, he cared so much about our family and was so impressed with our situation. But then when it came time to say, "Hey, we need to do business right here, right now," and I said, "I'm not ready to do business right here, right now," the attitude came out. He actually let my door slam on the way out. I came here on a holiday on my day, like literally just completely a Jekyll and Hyde situation, and he showed his true colors. But the way he approached the situation in the beginning, I already knew his true colors. There was no surprise there that this guy didn't care about my family, right? And to be frank, when I first meet you at your home and I'm there for a plumbing maintenance call or something, I don't care about your family that much. It's like it just is what it is. I don't know you. So for me to manufacture these feelings of great empathy and care for your family. Now, I'm a professional. So, much like the doctor, I want what's best for my patient. No question about it. What's best for the home, what's best for the family, what's best for my team, and then what's best for me. That's what I'm in the home for in that particular order. So, I didn't like the compliment, find something quick to find common ground. What I did notice that worked, what I call our cheat code or our superpower. A little bit more room to write than last week. Anybody read that? Yep. So who today went to the gas station and got hit with someone behind the counter and said, "Hey, thanks for shopping at Shell." Anybody get that this morning? Everybody knows what I'm talking about, though. How warm and fuzzy did you feel after that person shouted that on your way out? Meh, right? You could do without it. It's better than nothing, right? So there's a right way and a wrong way, or an effective way and an ineffective way, even to do gratitude. So the way that we train gratitude here is I would say put a sticky note on your dashboard that says gratitude. And on your way to a call, you touch that and you start thinking on the way there, why am I grateful that Mary Smith is alive today? Why am I genuinely grateful for this human being? Now, two things happen. It's not just manipulative. It's not just self-serving, but it is self-serving, because when you get there and you shower this mother of two housewife whose husband's at work all day with gratitude, who thinks it's probably the only big piece of gratitude she's going to feel all day? If she's my wife, it is. I'm trying to be a better husband, but it's when you step in the house and slip on the skateboard and you've been at work all day, it's hot outside. So you get, we take people for granted in our lives, and you have to assume that home that you're in is the exact same way. So when you pour real genuine gratitude out on someone, real good chance it's the first and only time they'll get it that day. What does that do for the connection with you? It's self-serving. It helps you. On the other side of that, what if you're just driving around from call to call all day looking for a reason to be grateful? How does that change the course of your day? Give me a thumbs up if it's a good thing. Come on, do it. Oh, it didn't do it. There it goes. Yeah. So you're filtering out everything that's not gratitude driving around all day, and you're filtering in everything that is gratitude driving around all day. How does your day change now? And then when you've stored that all up, you've pinched the end of that water hose, and you get to that client and boom, you let that hose loose and gratitude just floods the front door. You're off to a completely different start with this human being than you would have been if you told her what a nice poster is hanging on the garage wall and she's not even into Queen, right? And her husband's into that band. Like, it's just it's a corny way to make commonality. And you never know who cares about what. My wife loves the lawn. I don't. I'm the one who takes care of it, but don't care, right? So this is our cheat code. This is our superpower. If we're focusing on that all day, every day, we're going to have a better day regardless of how much we sell that day. Correct? Cool. So without further ado, Al is an author of The 7-Power Contractor. Phenomenal book, whether you're in the field, whether you're an apprentice, doesn't matter. It really kind of gives you some structure of how this operation is supposed to work, kind of how you fit into the operation. Also a trainer. Tommy Mello called me last night when he found out that Al was going to be on, and he couldn't stop doting on Al and talking about how much he changed his life. A lot of you were on here when Ellen Rohr was on recently, and Ellen couldn't say enough about Al as well, and all he's done for her and her life. And pretty much anywhere you go in the trades, you will hear people talk about how much Al has done for them. What he's going to talk about today, and I'm really excited about, is ethical sales, the power of ethical sales. And I'm pretty pumped because I truly don't know where he's going with this. But let's all give him a virtual muted round of applause. Thank you for joining us, Mr. Al Levy.
Thank you, my friends. Thank you. I'm going to kick in my slides here and hang on one second. I just want to share that I really appreciate this opportunity. And Brian, thank you for taking 5 minutes to steal my whole speech here. So, because I have a plan, and Brian knows me well enough, I always have a plan. I feel, and Ellen Rohr was the one who taught me this. Have a plan, or others will have a plan for you and you won't like it. So that's what I'm going to share with you here is when you go to run a call. So I was at my own company. My company was plumbing, heating, cooling, electrical on Long Island, New York. We did residential, commercial, industrial. Worked with my two older brothers and my dad. Company was started in 1936. It is now on to my nephew, fourth generation, who's there with my brother. So my dad had this idea, raised his boys on, we should never ask anyone to do anything that we haven't done ourselves. And so we did every job, service tech, installer, you know, salesperson, all of those things. Problem was, I wasn't really good at sales. And even though I've built a long career in great sales, and I built a long career in being consulting and having to talk to people, once upon a time, I was very shy. And I would violate every rule that you would have. I couldn't make eye contact with you. I couldn't smile. I wasn't going to shake your hand. All of these things that are the sales basics, if you will, that existed years ago. And it really was very sabotaging, but my father would have nothing of it. So the way he started me out is I did door-to-door sales. That's right. Brian and I talked about this at lunch. You want to get great at sales? Try door-to-door sales. And just trying to get people to engage with you and talk to you, it's amazing how you get to the point. And it's amazing how you start to learn these things. I did a lot of sales training. I was lucky enough to go to Dale Carnegie and a lot of other great sales training along the way. Read every book I could years ago on sales as well. Continued to master my craft. Here's the bad news. My dad was great at sales. And so, of course, I tried to mimic him. And I was awful because my dad was quiet. And when he would talk to customers, customers would lean in as he would speak. They always had a giant smile on his face, and they could tell he was there to be their servant, not their salesperson. I told the story to Brian a while back. My dad passed away. I delivered the eulogy. And before that, a friend of mine walked up to me and said, "Look around at this funeral home. He's 84 years old. There are 500 people here today. They were his customers at his funeral." Let that wash over you for a minute, because it washed over me. He spent his whole life being a servant. If you want to be great at sales, in my opinion, become a servant, not a salesperson. And that is really what ethical sales power is all about. And where it came from was all of these steps that I put in place. So you guys love sales. Congratulations. Otherwise, you wouldn't be here this morning. What I have to share with you is you're going to get a lot of sales training from everywhere. Just keep going to the internet. Just keep bringing the next sales trainer in. Keep doing all the stuff. And all of a sudden, you're not going to have a systematic way. And Brian stole my line about, you know, it was popular 30 years ago about, oh, compliment the customer on something before you even get to the job. That customer has water pouring down from the third floor. This is not the time to talk about what kind of dog is that. This is the time to get busy and start serving them. That's really what I want to say. So keep it simple, stupid. First off, there is no such thing as a salesperson. I absolutely hate this concept. Oh, they're a good talker. They're a great salesperson. They'll be a great salesperson. Actually, I have trained people all over the country through companies in the United States and Canada when I was doing this one-to-one consulting and doing sales power. It was a day and a half program. I did spend another half a day with the CSRs because what I had learned, my own experience is CSRs can either make your sales experience greater or they can crush it and you haven't even gotten to the door. So it's all of this chain reaction in a good way or in a bad way. But learning how to become a good salesperson or servant is a skill, and it needs to be trained on a documented system. In my opinion, it got to be 3 steps, 5 steps, 7 steps. I'll throw in 8 because Tommy had an 8-step system that always works, and 10 steps. If you think you can train everyone who's at your company on 150 steps they have to do, I'll help you out. That's just not going to happen. It may happen once in a while, but it's going to be really, really hard to continually do it over and over and over again. So the key is documented and nonstop training. So think of it more like peeling an onion a layer at a time is how you get better and better at sales. I did sales both as a service tech, did sales both as a system advisor, which is a fancy name for a big ticket salesperson. Even if you have, you know, the selling tech, it's still the same thing. In the end, this is really the essence of sales power. These are the steps that it takes in whatever you do to have this documented system. So my five-step sales process was this: arrive at the job the right way. That didn't mean at the job. It meant, how did you look this morning? Were you shaved, clean, neat, trim beard, whatever it is that you do? Is your attire immaculate? So why is this big deal about how you're dressed, how you look? Because we make big judgments on very little evidence. That is how we are wired as human beings. You think you don't do that? You think you don't prejudge? I'll give you a scenario. I came out here to Arizona from New York. I'm told I still have a little New York accent. I've been here 22 years. I think it's getting less. And by the way, move away from my car. So anyway, when I wanted to get doctors out here, how would it be as impressive if I go to the doctor's office, the guy is wearing a Hawaiian shirt, a stethoscope, shorts, and flip-flops? Am I judging this doctor? You bet I am. Attire is important. It's actually important for you, because what I learned is the better I was dressed, the better I was groomed, the more esteem I had for myself. I was clearly differentiating myself from everyone else who would ever arrive and serve the person the way that I wanted to be served in their place. So arriving at that job, keeping your truck neat and clean. I understand you have crazy busy days. I've lived that same thing. And it's easy for stuff to pile up and not be in the place. There's a million good reasons to have your truck neat and spotless. But it is also a sales maker or a sales breaker. They come out to your truck, or they see your truck, and they see the way you take care of your truck. And from that very little evidence, they're already making up the opinion about how you're going to take care of my house. One of the things that Brian talked about, I was a hawk about this. Where you park is an enormous part of the sales momentum process. They need to see your truck. But if you just drive into my driveway without my permission, I already am forming my opinion about you. And the reason is the last contractor who parked in my driveway, they left parker screws that flattened the tires on my car. And at a couple $100, I'm already hating you, and you haven't even reached my doorstep. Or you parked in my driveway, the last guy had an oil leaking from his truck, and now it's dripping on my brand new driveway. Another reason I'm prejudging you and hating you. You park in my driveway, I have to go to the kids' soccer game, and now I have to get you to move your truck to go do that. There's a million reasons. Now, if you have to, and there are areas that I work, it's 400 feet because they live in a castle, you need to call and at least get my permission to ask if it's okay to park in the driveway. Come to the door with just what you need to open the call and run it right. Don't show up with a tractor trailer full of tools, assuming that you've already got the job. That's not part of the way that it goes. And when you get to the door, and when your posture is right, and there's a giant smile on your face, things begin to go the right way. Open the opportunity always the right way. In my opinion, you already know why you're there. They gave a customer, when they spoke to the customer service rep, it is okay to repeat it in some way that it doesn't sound like you're mimicking it. And then ask three good questions, three really good open-ended questions. And when they talk, take notes. I don't care if you do it on a tablet, care what you write it, or write it out if you still want to do it. because the only words that matter are theirs. But I'm asking good questions. I'm not spending time on who, what's such a beautiful color of your house. It's, that would be my assumption. This is not the point. They called me here. They took time out of their busy day. I'm going to come here and do what they need, and I'm going to serve them better than everyone else. Now, what I walk up to the door is a huge briefcase, imaginary briefcase of potential solutions. Because what I taught all of my techs and everyone else that I've ever trained, and if you are there out there, listen to this. The initials are T as in Tom, S as in Sam, P as in Peter. Train your techs and train yourself to become the total solution provider. My guys were not sales machines. They were just super trained. They were trained in-house in our own hands-on training center, great communicators. This is really what we were going to. Told them to put their shoulders back, their head up, and to make good eye contact, have a smile on their face, and be there to serve people. Their goal was to go and do the next big thing, which is to ask for permission to do a survey so they don't miss anything. Now, a visual survey is a 15-minute survey because you want to look at everything. This originated not to sell people anything. It was because as a tech, I told Brian the story, I had gone to a customer's house to drain the rust out of the water heater. That was what I went to do. And I did it. I'm at the dispatch desk the next day, as luck would have it. That customer calls up and says, your guy was here yesterday and he did something with my water heater. And now the faucet on the third floor is leaking. I was nowhere near the third floor of that house. But the customer's mind is, everything was great till you showed up. And now whatever goes wrong for the next 2 weeks, it's because of you. And it's unfair, but if you were a customer, how many times have you thought the same thing about whatever home service got done with you? It's just how we are. So I taught the guys is to be proactive. I also learned a very hard lesson for you plumbers out there. I was working at a colonial three-story. Where else would it be? And behind the toilet, I was trying to adjust something. And of course, I cracked it. And water is cascading out of it. I scurry down the staircase, run down to the basement, looking for the water main. Wood panel, wood panel, wood panel. No water main to be seen. When should I have looked for the water main? Yeah, at the beginning of the call. What do we know about water mains? Well, a lot of them have gate valves, ball valves should be there. What is the one shutoff that a homeowner would have if an emergency would come? Their water main. When is the time to identify this proactively? So that was always what I taught plumbers to do, is to do this survey to try and identify things. They're good suggestions that we're going to put on our menu. I approach sales as if you came into my great restaurant and I am a great waiter. That is what my job is to be. And if I don't offer a menu and I don't ask enough good questions about what they want, dietary concerns, all of these things, think about the great experiences you've had in really great restaurants. The whole staff is smiling. The whole staff welcomes you in. It's not just the waiter. These are the things to open up your opportunity the right way. Getting permission is what I mentioned to do this visual survey really helps you come back and make good recommendations because as a big ticket salesperson, system advisor, they call me in to do a heating system. I would look at the heating system, measure things out, sell them the job. Then they would call up and go, this system doesn't work. I go, okay, I'll come by and check it. And I did. And it was working. Well, they bought a new heating system because they have a room 200 feet away and that room is ice cold. It's a porch with nothing to do it. But they thought if they bought a new heating system, it would fix it. They are not heating and cooling people. They are not electrical people. They are not plumbing people. Even if they spent 5 minutes on YouTube watching videos, they assume things. And if I don't talk to them and I don't get them to answer my questions, I can't serve them. So as a big ticket salesperson, it was my obligation to go through a set of questions. Any room's too hot? Any room's too cold? Hey, do you ever find the lights blink when the air conditioning kicks on? Things of that nature is really my job. And I mean job in the best way possible. I feel to this day, and you can hear my passion, that no one is going to serve these people better. They can say no to anything and everything, but it won't be because I didn't share my passion. I didn't share great solutions. I didn't identify things that they assume can't be fixed, or they assume something will fix it, but they don't know what it is. And so getting permission and knowing how to do this is really good. The permissions is basically pretty much, you know, in an effort to save us coming back for what we call a callback, because we know you take time and energy away from your work, your family, and the rest of it. And the company doesn't want to come back here unnecessarily. It would be bad for both of us. Would it be okay if I do a quick visual survey so I don't miss anything here today? The percentages of people that say no is probably less than 1% if you set it up right. Step four is, after you have done everything, after you have checked everything, after you've measured everything, after you ask good questions and affirmed from the customer that this is something that they could want or need or do, then your job is to present the menu. Now, a lot of people present options, and that's great. Presenting the menu is really, to me, is I'm not going to look at you and the house you live at and go, well, you probably don't have any money. I'm thinking a hamburger is what I should tell you to buy. That's not my job. I serve the richest of the rich, and I only had to drive about a mile and a half, 2 miles to the poorest of the poor. My job was to serve everyone the best way and come up with solutions that could fit on their basis of what was important to you. So presenting the menu is really about this, my friends. They invented fire first. And then second, they invented FAB, features, advantages, benefits. I know everyone wants something sexier and newer, but I'm going to tell you right now, if you want sales and really quality sales, then features, advantage, benefits is something that you need to practice on all the time. Features is what's special about it. How is that an advantage and the benefit? We, as humans, we don't buy pretty much anything unless it addresses our benefit. Nobody goes to Home Depot because they want a drill bit. They want a hole in this wall, so they have to buy the drill. That's really what we're trying to address. And then it's a matter of working together to get an approved agreement. My belief is that, again, I was the total solution provider, and that's what I trained on my people, and that's what I trained on companies just like yours, including my Drain franchise, which is nationwide. All of these companies were trained on the same thing about how to get to an agreement. In the old days, you used to write it out. Now it's still, you need to be able to do it on your tablet in a way that there's enough lines, because you're going to go over the features, advantage, and benefit of everything you are recommending in their interest and what it is that they need to do, and come up with the best solution that we can have. A lot of people like to do 5 to 7. There's great sales training out there. Nothing I'm saying today here is meant to say anything that isn't complimentary of theirs. Just be careful when you're pulling from too many things. So I led with my best. And if I got an objection, I said, is money your only concern? If it is, I have a really good second option. And then I would give the second option. And ultimately, I would taught my guys just to be aware of this. If a customer would try to talk us down into a repair that we couldn't stand behind, or a job that we wouldn't do as a big ticket, you have my full permission to say the following. I so thank you for the time you took today with me. I hope I've explained, you know, what it is and why it is, and I hope I've done my best. But if you're going to ask me to do a bad repair, I'm not going to let that happen. And if you want me to do an install that isn't something we can stand behind with industry-leading best warranty, then also it's not what's going to happen. And I understand if you want to go get somebody else. And I gave them permission to get up and walk to the door. 90% of the time, they never made it to the door. Customers were looking at your intent. And especially in New York, they were very much intent in shaking you up to see what how much you really believed it. How could this heating system be a, more than a dollar? All my friends buy heating systems for a dollar. They were just looking to see how much I believed in it. And that was something that I had to overcome. What Brian said earlier about, you know, raising objections. I believe it is one of the most important skills we have to develop. Having said that, I asked my dad, as I mentioned, probably to this day, the best salesperson I ever met. I said, Dad, I need a really great closing line. And he was very nice. He was very nice. And he had a big, broad smile. And he looks at me and he goes, Al, if you need a really good closing line, you really sucked till now. And that's really the truth of it. This idea about a closing line. Everything is building a process to where your higher percentages of a good close is going to happen. Because they are closing themselves. You are not closing them. Here's how stupid I was when I got enthusiastic for sales. I had gone off to Europe. Found off this great European technology, brought it back here to America. We did Radiant before anybody was doing it in the 90s. We had all these great solutions. So I'm excited in my presentation and I'm talking about it. And a customer does this. This is not made up. Says to me in the middle of this, Al, it sounds great. How soon could we get started? I go, I'll get to that in a minute. Let me just finish this. I am not kidding. So I had to learn one of the big skills here is if I'm always talking, I'm always selling. If they are talking, they are buying. And that is the big difference here. So documented, there are five chapters to what I just rolled out, but I don't expect people to just know that. All of it is designed again to be a sales servant versus a salesperson. And working with big ticket salespeople in techs, this is in play. But I also work with the CSRs because they affect how things go. Here's one thing to know. Structure does not make you a robot unless you stop at that. Structure is to be practiced so that it becomes you. And the more you do it, and the more you do it in the right way, the more that will happen. Non-stop training. Non-stop training is practicing in-house, not at my house. And if you guys don't do this training in-house, and I'm sure all of you do, but doing it in a hands-on training center that makes me feel like I am in someone's home, training is going to suffer. Now, we did technical training, we did operational training, we did sales training. And then we would combine the whole call the whole way, whether you were a service tech coming to do repairs or a system advisor coming to sell something new. All of this was constantly practiced. And then we would do it. It's tied in this real training center. And no, ride-alongs haven't vanished with technology. Now, Rilla is a phenomenal new technology. I have no vested interest in saying what I just said. But it's another tool in your toolbox. You still, in my opinion, if you are a sales manager and you're managing your big ticket salespeople, you need to get out in the truck and find out how this whole call goes long before they get in. The items that I was talking about, parking, appearance, how they come to the door, what they say, what they do, what the customer's facial reactions, because 70% of communication is nonverbal. Nonverbal. So these are things that we need to do. We want to augment that with real ride-along training. Is anyone able to remember five full chapters that I trained them on? No. But with nonstop training, it's a yes. It's also if they take away that there are three, five, seven, or 10, in my case, five steps, we used to tie it to an acronym. So whatever the company's name, which like Wiser, stands for something. That's really when all else fails and stress comes up. And when you're under stress, you cannot think and act as well as you want. You will always be able to fall back on those five steps in my case. And then again, you have to test it, and verify that this is what's going. So yeah, overcoming sales objections. If you wait for a sales objection, now this is my opinion, to be raised, you don't own it. It is a very practiced skill. If I know every time I present something, there's a 75% chance that I'm going to get a price objection, or it's going to be an issue, or there's something that they didn't understand, it's on me to build it into my presentation so that I can raise the objection and overcome it. This is high-level sales training. I agree that you should absolutely first be able to, when an objection comes up, overcome it. Now, the ways to overcome it is never-ending training and raising objection, but it isn't just your words. You can talk to overcome, but we already agreed talking is selling. So visual evidence. In the old days, we had evidence manuals, and the evidence means why choose our company. And I taught customers 10 great reasons to choose us. Customers, we then did it with their text. We go, look, we have 10 great reasons, and I'm happy to show you. Here are just three great reasons why we are the right choice for this. So visual evidence. Visual evidence also means, who says so other than you that this is going to save me 50% on my heating bill? Well, you better have DOT, Department of Energy, and other things that literally they can see from third-party sources. Because it's not that they don't trust you. They don't trust you. And if you were them and they were selling you something big, you'd also have an issue of trust. So who else says this besides you? Evidence is also testimonials, things of that nature. That again is how to do it. In the hands-on training center, or even coming to my wife's house before I had a training center, my wife could really do this well, play nice and play rough. So what do I mean by that? You start out by playing the easy customer who's easy to please, easy to say yes, can roll through the process. And then we train as many of the what ifs that can occur in these sales scenarios so that the staff can get good at it. And then we play rough customer because it's going to happen to them. And this is the best, safest place to make that happen. So growing next level sales skills, mastering the power of testimonials. My great industry friend told me years ago is, it's interesting what you have to say, Al, but what I really want to hear is, who are customers that look like me, live in my service area, have to say about whatever you did or whatever you've done for them? And testimonials come in three flavors: a great product or service that made their life better, you are fast, neat, clean, stand behind your work, what's great about you. And then the home run one is that talks about those two things in an overall testimonial. Video testimonials are super, super powerful, not just for marketing. They're also powerful for sales. Presentations rooted in the three types of customers. I read a great book, Nicholas Boothman years ago wrote, some of us are visual. That's how we see the world. And I use the word see. Some of us are auditory. We hear things. Oh, I can hear what you're saying. And some of us are tactile. We have to touch it. In the old days, we used to actually, the plumbers bring in, show the difference between the weight of things and have a visual discussion about what it was that we were installing so they can feel it as part of the thing. So here's the thing. You can have a clue as to which of these three they are, but you'll never know for sure. So a great presentation involves all three senses. I see it. I'm watching your slide presentation of the evidence manual. I'm hearing you talk. I'm touching something. That's why even today, and it sounds weird, brochures still work. Pull the curtain back on how the magic happens. I was losing customers at a time where I served, and I knew I got out of my own bed at 2 a.m. to go give them heat. And again, my great industry friend said to me, Al, they don't know how you make the magic happen. They just assume if you can do it, everyone can do it. So we began to peel the curtain back and show them all of the training, all of the technology, all of the things that we would do that again raised us to here. Our whole life was to get out of commodity and be seen as niche for the people that you want to do. Ask great questions, shut up, take notes, because the only words that count are the ones that they are speaking. Reward the right things, give them the money that you create, service techs for hitting your KPIs and going above, system advisors for hitting your KPIs and going above, installers for hitting your KPIs. Now, here's the trick. In a really well-designed, like my org chart, the sales manager sits atop the big ticket sales. It has to be sold right for us to be able to do it right. And together, we're working as a group to make that happen. We influence each other. And that is a 30,000 foot. This is what Ellen Rohr used to do when we worked together. One on the right hand, hands-on training center. This is just one of the 50 or more, 100 different training centers I built. And some of them were even better than this. So all I wanted to say at this point, Al at 7 Power Contractor, I do offer contractors a free 30-minute Zoom. It is not a sales situation. As a contractor, I suffered. I was lucky. There's a reason my tagline was less stress, more success. And for any of you out there listening, if you are in the field, I appreciate everything you do with my whole heart. I have been you. I know what it's like. I know the sacrifices you make. Even the big ticket sales guys, like nights, weekends, holidays, things of that nature. And I thank you for keeping people safe, warm, having great water to be able to drink and bathe and the rest of it. We should remember why we do what we do. It's that important, my friends. And I thank you. Okay, I'm done.
All right, more virtual applause. Love it. Let's just do the golf clap. Love it. Al, as I did last week, and I'll do, this one was pretty easy to bullet point because it's be a servant, not a salesperson. Be a servant, not a salesperson. No such thing as a born salesperson. Presentation has to be 3 to 10 steps, no more. And I like that he put 3, 5, or 7 steps and no more than 10, because if you get to double digits in your sales process, you're just going to have a lot of people who can't remember it at the end of the day. Less really is more. And documented and nonstop training. What is it with all you smart guys and making us document everything, for crying out loud, man? Look, it's not my strong suit, all right? Love the nonstop training. Write it on your hand. That would really make it simple. Yeah, before we let him go, this is Al's book. Everyone in the trades should read it. But if you're in any type of leadership position, if you ask Tommy Mello, me, Ellen Rohr, it's mandatory reading. It's short. It's simple. Not a whole lot of words on each page. Thank God. Otherwise, I wouldn't be able to get through
it. I wrote it that you should be able to read it 2 to 4 hours. But the truth of it is I wanted you to read it over and over again.
Yeah. 2 to 4 days for me, but most of you guys can probably get through it.
I'm dyslexic. I'm a slow reader. Dyslexic. Mm-hmm.
So again, Al, I can't thank you. Like you really have no business coming on this thing for free and giving away your stuff like you just did. And I really want everybody to understand how much we should appreciate the fact that Al came on here and did this, because he can very easily charge a fortune for an hour like this. And we're not paying for Wiser Wednesdays, man. So again, Al, I really appreciate it. Let me know what I can do to make it up to you, buddy.
There's nothing. This is a great opportunity for me. I was given a gift in life with great sales mentors and great coaches. And if I've done a good job here today, then I've honored them.
That you have. Thanks, buddy. See you guys next week.
Thank you, my friends.
Thanks for tuning in.
All right. Go make people happy out there.